Well, so, yeah, our speaker today is Nick Peters. He's a really smart apologist, really one of, and he's got a blog called Deeper Waters, which if you want to read his stuff, you can find. A lot of great articles on that blog. He even is able to somehow get interviews with all these great apologists, like guys like Craig Keener, Francis Beckwith, et cetera. He's also, I believe, it's J.P. Holding, right, that you're friends with? Yeah. He does stuff with J.P. Holding on his website, which is called Tectonics, that's it. And he's also Mike Lacona's son-in-law, so you know, I'm just going to name drop that. And so if you'll just give Nick Peters a welcome as he gives us our talk today.
Okay, is this on all right? Can everyone hear me okay? All right, good to be here. I'm just kind of curious, how many people before Cody or Dr. Craig even mentioned this had heard of Deeper Waters or the Deeper Waters podcast in here? Anyone? Okay. Apparently I need to do some more advertising. Well, my ministry is Deeper Waters. It's all about diving into the ocean of truth. I have a podcast. I generally interview someone most every Saturday or so, and there's a whole listing there. You can go to deeperwaters.ddns.net if you want to find out some more about that, and I would encourage you to do that. And as I stand up before you, you look and see me, and there's really nothing distinguishing about me probably that you can see. I'm just a face in a crowd, just someone that you'd see and think nothing of. Now, the difference is if we had someone come in here on crutches, for instance, or in a wheelchair or something like that, we'd all know this is someone who's a person just like us, but they've got a struggle. It's different, and we can show them our special care, and we should, and we should. But the thing about conditions such as mine is that you can't see it just by looking at us. Now, maybe if you're a professional, you can see some mannerisms and such, but if you're the average man on the street, you can't see it. My condition is something called Asperger's syndrome, which I prefer to speak about as autism light. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about how this came about. I was born in 1980 in Corryton, Tennessee, just outside of Knoxville. Not sure how many people are familiar with that area. But I was a very different child. My parents tell me that I was reading before I was 1 year old, and I pretty much taught myself how to do it. And my fascination came with this book you all might have heard of called The Bible. I understand it's a bestseller, but we had this big white King James Bible, and I think it's in my office today. And I would just pore over that book, and my parents thought I was just fascinated by the shapes of the letters and things like that. And one day I came across a word. I didn't know what this word was, and I asked, and I said, oh, that's chapter. Oh. Chapter, okay. Now, keep in mind, what I'm telling you is things I've been told. I have no memory myself of this. Now, my dad took me to the mall one day, and he sat me down in front of a computer, and he went to play a video game there for a little bit. If things are anything like they are still to this day, his video games do not last long. He came back. There was a crowd, a small crowd, around the computer, and he looked on the screen, and there on the screen was typed all the books of the Bible in order, spelled correctly, with how many chapters they had. And he asked, did he do this? I don't know. So he clears the screen and says, you Nick, do it again. Something is different. When I went to school, I didn't exactly fit in with the other kids. For one thing, speaking was extremely difficult. When I spoke, it was practically like speaking to someone from another planet. I had to have a translator, really, to understand what I was saying. My parents sent me to transition after kindergarten, which is in between kindergarten and first grade, and I had to go to another school for that. Turns out I really liked this school, and they kept me there. So remember in second grade, got my first Nintendo when it came out. Some of you might remember when that happened. There was soon a new game master at the school, and that has stuck with me to this day, that I am still a hardcore gamer. I still love to dominate. My wife refuses to play games with me for some reason, something about, you know, that if I play against someone, I want to make them feel utterly humiliated as I pound them into the ground. Oh, okay, anyway. But that was what was going on. And by the way, keep in mind also when I was in school, throughout elementary, middle school, high school, it was always the same way for me. I was that annoying kid that you hated because I would go sit in class, probably just doodle and such all day long after I did my work, come home, play video games all night long, still get A's. Yeah, my father-in-law has said about me, people like you make me sick. Now, something else though, that was going on that was odd, my diet. As you can tell, I'm hardly someone with an Atlas build up here. I'm not very muscular at all. I'm extremely underweight. And due to scoliosis surgery, by the way, since literally I am the man of steel now, so I've got that steel rod back here. So, honey, you married a Superman. Mm-hmm. But because of this, I really can't gain weight. So my weight has to stay usually around 120, 125, which means I'm perpetually 30 pounds underweight. Some of you are probably getting jealous right now. But because of this diet fixation, people like me on the spectrum, we can often have a hard time with food. When my wife and I go out to eat, it is very difficult to find a place for us many times because our desires are so different. She's very texture-oriented. She cares about how the food feels and such. I'm sight-oriented. I care about how it looks. If I'm doing something just nice for her and she's had a meal and there's a paper plate she wants me to throw away and it's got a crumb on it and she wants me to throw it out, I'll pick it up and go, I might as well be handling biohazard waste at that point. So this is something very different about us. And we don't always understand the social rules that are going on. We look to you all for our guidance in many ways, what we call the neurotypical people, which can be problematic because you all are incredibly different with how you respond. And sometimes we don't know what we're supposed to do, what we're supposed to say, how we're supposed to feel, what are the social rules. One illustration I usually use, they deny he's got Asperger's, but I look at this guy, I think he does. Anybody familiar with Sheldon Cooper on the Big Bang Theory, for instance? That is us, in many cases. Although I have to stipulate, the rule is when you meet one person with autism, you know how many people you've met with autism? One. We can all still be very, very different. But to keep going back to my story, I was going through middle school and high school, still pretty much just being an A student and such. In fact, in high school, I got the most studious senior superlative, which I thought was odd because I never studied, but I had all the effects of studying. But in high school, I hit a dark place. I had intense depression. I had panic attacks. They were horrible. I tell you, when you start having a panic attack, you have two great fears going through your mind at that time. I see you nodding. You know what it's like. You have two great fears. Number one, I am going to die. Fear number two, I am not going to die. Sometimes these would even happen at a Bible study. Now that is very embarrassing to happen. I honestly don't know how I made it through that time. It was the darkest time I've been through. And this is someone who's had major back surgery. I would rather have the back surgery again than have that time again. But when I graduated from high school, I didn't really know what to do with myself. The only thing I knew where was a Bible, and I went to Bible college. Now, when I was applying to voc rehab, they saw my intellect, and they said, you know, you really shouldn't be going into ministry. Your intellect, you could do so much better with engineering, which I didn't care for. No offense to engineers, it's just not my thing. And he said, besides, now keep in mind what they said as I say this here. We don't think you'll be able to handle public speaking. Very funny. And I tell my wife often, I say, I wish they could have been there when I gave my senior sermon at the college, which was before about 1,000 people. Frankly, because of my condition, speaking to a whole lot of you at once is much easier than speaking to you all one-on-one. And when it's one-on-one, I really have to exert myself, focus on what I'm doing, say, okay, you have to look them in the eye sometime. Really, it's a real drain on me to do that. But when I'm up here speaking, it's normal. I mean, shortly after we got married, my grandmother passed away. And I never had a trouble with public speaking before, but this was my grandmother. And I was the last pastor assigned to do her funeral. There were 3 of us, and I got to speak for 10 minutes. And I was scared as could be before I got up there, probably because I have to honor my grandmother here. But as soon as I got up there and started speaking, everything was gone. I was free. And it's my natural element at that point. But while I'm in Bible college, I wind up talking to this student one day. I don't know how, but he's downstairs in the lobby area studying something. I say, what are you studying? Apologetics. What's that? So he tells me it's all about the defense of the faith, answering questions and such. Thought that way in the back of my mind. Now, I'd also been doing internet evangelism, and I'll tell you something about the internet. It has given autistic people a voice, because we find it so much easier to speak on the net. And I realized I needed to read something to learn how to answer atheists that came in. The first book I read was More of the Carpenter by Josh McDowell. And then after that, I picked up this book by this guy. I'm not sure many of you may have heard of him, Lee Strobel. He wrote this unknown book called The Case for Christ. I call that the book that lit my fire. And at that point, my mother started panicking every time I went out because I come home from a bookstore and have all these books here. And fortunately, it's not a problem today. My wife loves seeing all these books around the house and such. And why are you shaking your head, honey? But that became my passion. You see, when we're on the spectrum, usually we've got 2 settings for something. Absolute no interest whatsoever. Total obsession. Very little is in between. So if you get us talking about something that we really, really enjoy, you will get us going. When Smallville was on the air, you come up to me and you start talking about Smallville, I am in your corner, okay? And I had all the episode titles memorized in order. That's over 200 of them. I was that big of a fanatic. Like, we have a Superman theme song played at our wedding, in fact. And it was her idea. But I started learning this apologetics. And I kept saying after a while, it drove me crazy, all these reading assignments my professors were giving me in college. They were giving me all these books to read, and it was keeping me away from all these books I was wanting to read. How could they do that? And I'll also say that when I went to Bible college, they had to give us a test when we came in. It wasn't anything we were professionally graded on, but it was just to see our Bible knowledge, see how much we knew. And it was a 50-question general Bible quiz. And I took it like everyone else. Now, the record of that test was 49 out of 50 correct until I took it. The first acing of a test. Now, I say this not because I'm trying to brag about intellect, but just because I want to show that this is the way a lot of us think. Now, not every Aspie is intellectually oriented, but a whole lot of us are. Now, while I'm there, someone tells me about Severn Evangelical Seminary. And I think at this point my path is set. And I decide I'm going to head to seminary there. In fact, this friend who told me about this, years later, he has a kid, and they find out this kid has Asperger's. He comes to me and says, Nick, what do you think? What should I do? And I told him, you know, first I'm going to tell you is, thank God, because now you have a chance to see the world through a whole new set of eyes. You never would have seen it through before. You can see it through the eyes of your son. He still says that's the best piece of advice he'd been given. But I'm over there now at Severn Evangelical. This guy called Gary Habermas comes to our church that meets there. And Gary Habermas talks a lot about doubt. Now, I don't doubt Christianity often. I mean, every now and then, you know, you have those occasional doubts that come in. You have to give yourself your project truth and such. But I did doubt myself. It's always so introspective. Am I good enough? Do I have what it takes? Even if everyone around me was saying, yes, I am, I still didn't believe it. So I said to him, Gary, would you be willing to work for me, email me sometime? He said, sure. Now, I'd also gotten a job at the Christian Research Institute. And about a year or two later, I was heading back from there. And I remember that Gary was going to be at the seminary because he's teaching a module on the historical Jesus. I was stopped by and see him. It's been a while. This is, I think, around August of 2009 or so. And I stop in and see him. And he says, hey, Nick, you know about Mike Lacona? Yeah, I've heard of him. And he says, do you know that he has a daughter? No, I did not know this. He says, she is going through a really hard time, and she's got Asperger's. And someone mentioned that you have it too, and thought maybe you'd like to talk to her some. So his daughter, Allie, gets this email from this guy she's never met before sometime. And I just introduce myself and talk a little bit. And so we start emailing back and forth. And sometimes I say things that drive her crazy, not in a good way, because I'm just older. I've known things a lot more and such. And she doesn't like a lot of the things I say. I say, yeah, I think your parents are right on this one. But there is something about me that's different, because all these apologists she's met and such, there are these really nerdy guys, but they don't seem to have any life whatsoever outside of that and such. And she found this is someone she can talk to about video games and anime and anything else that she's interested in. And I actually knew what I was talking about. I mean, heck, we shared Final Fantasy videos together. That's how much we were able to talk. And then Labor Day of that year, we decided we'd start going out together. It took until October before we met. Things didn't take too long after that. I actually proposed to her on Christmas Eve. And she was going to stay with my parents and I for Christmas, because I'd spent Thanksgiving with her family, so she was spending Christmas with mine. And I proposed to her that day, and she said yes, and I still have some happy memories about it. And in fact, with all these stories, if you just find me on Facebook, I have many notes about them. And we were married 7 months later, so it took less than a year for us to get together. And we've got an Asperger's marriage. Now, something else, though, my wife still struggles with the depression and such a lot. And this is something that we have to be aware of in the church, because people with disabilities and especially mental conditions, they often get overlooked. How many of you have seen some things like AIDS research on TV, or heart disease, or muscular dystrophy, or cystic fibrosis, or cancer? And all of these are worthy causes. But how often do you see something about mental health? Can anybody even think of an organization you donate to for mental health? Many of us can't. But mental health issues are extremely severe, and they need to be handled properly. You see, if you come up to us, we could be extremely quiet when you first meet us. And the impression a lot of people get is, well, aren't very rude. Okay, sometimes we can be rude, just like anyone else, but usually that's not it. Usually, we don't know you yet, and until we know you, until we have some reason to trust you, you are essentially a threat to us, to our well-being. And that trust that you have with us, it has to be earned. I'm not saying that's fair. I'm not saying it's fair. I'm just saying that's the way it is. I often say about Asperger's that the condition is an explanation, but it's not a justification. In essence, we want to know if you really want to know about us, if you really want to care about us, or if we're just some kind of a project for you. Are you really interested in us as persons? And when we come to you, your church, we're not going to respond the same way. For instance, I've got a cold today, so I've had to tell people I haven't been able to shake hands. In some ways, that's also a benefit for me. Because if we're at a church service, the hardest time for any of us is, now you all stand up and shake hands and greet the person next to you. The only thing I like about that time is I just turn to Allie and say, remember, greet one another with a holy kiss. That is the only time. Then I'll just turn and say, now, did I greet you yet already? Yes, you already did. Okay. Did I greet you already? Yes, you already did. Like I said, total obsession or no interest. Guess where I'm at with her? When we come in, you don't know to treat us differently. You can't know. But unfortunately, too many times, people on the spectrum and such can be written off before we get a chance to get to be known. And we're precious people that Jesus Christ loves and died for, too. And when it comes to things like depression as well, and these mental struggles that we have, the church really engages in friendly fire. We love to shoot our own wounded. If I came in here and said, I've got a splitting headache. If one of you had Tylenol or Advil, you would not hesitate to give it to me. And we'd all think, yeah, that's good and noble. Now, if I came in and said, I'm feeling so depressed today. So, cheer up, you're in the house of the Lord. Yeah, excuse me, I want to smack you at that point if I hear you say that. It doesn't work, and you know it doesn't work because when you're in a bad mood, it doesn't work for you. And we've got this idea that if you're a Christian, everything is always supposed to be sunshine and rainbows, and it's going to be wonderful. It's not. There are some days life is horrible. And, you know, when we're talking about Asperger's having a hard time with relationships, some of you, for instance, no doubt are great prayer warriors. God bless you. Thank you so much. For someone like myself, it is extremely difficult. Because if you're going to say a relationship with another human being is hard to establish and grow and develop, think how much harder it is to establish a relationship with God, who's completely different from all of us. We don't understand it a lot of times. We also tend to take things very, very literally, if you say it. You absolutely have to watch what you say around us. Sometimes we do not get metaphors. We do not get sarcasm. I find that very odd because I speak sarcasm very fluently, but I do not read it well at all. When it comes to these conditions, you realize it's not just some sinful impulse in us or anything like that. It's just that this is a real struggle for us. This is something we have to work through. And giving us these nice little spiritual platitudes is not going to work. Personally, I think the church has entered an area where we engage too often in soundbite thinking. Especially in our apologetics, we think you just give us one little statement out there, boom, you've answered the problem of evil. Congratulations. No, you haven't. One of the best examples of this in our culture is memes. Atheists and Christians both, I see a lot of atheists on the internet, putting up a meme with some dumb little quote and thinking they've created a powerful argument. And I'm just going to... We don't work that way. We want first to be understood. before anything else. We don't know how we're supposed to react certain times. We don't know if we're following what Sheldon Cooper would call social protocol properly or not. Now, you can get the idea that a lot of us are just robots with no emotions. That's not true. My wife, for instance, on the spectrum, is strongly emotional. She balances out my intellectualness. But I'll tell you, her emotional capacity, it does rub off on me a lot. I've told her one of the greatest things she's given me is that she's empowered me to feel a lot more than I would before. I mean, we were at this funeral yesterday. She saw me start to break down a few times. I didn't have any shame over it. This was a good friend of mine. And I was so glad to have her right there. Something else also is that we don't respond well to touch a lot of times. For me, the exception is her. I don't mind her touching me. But most anyone else, our friend, for instance, his wife, she always gives me an air hug instead of a real one because she knows that's the way I work. In fact, my mother-in-law got shocked when I gave her a real hug a few days or so ago. And for me, it's just bodily contact can be really weird. And especially usually out of respect for my wife, I try to avoid it with women as well. And so when you come up, if you're very extroverted, outgoing, eager to meet us and such, we are going to run as fast as we can from you. I've met extroverts like this. It terrifies me to see you. So if you are that extroverted person and you know that we're like this, I know it's hard, but I'm going to ask you, please take that into consideration when you meet with us. And keep in mind, this isn't something that you're just going to cure or something. In fact, Allie and I have had discussions about this. If there came out a cure for Asperger's tomorrow, she'd be one of the first people in line to get it. I don't blame her. I would stay as far away from it as possible. You know what? This condition does give me some difficulties to work through, but it's also a blessing for me in some ways because it gives me a mind that's able to process information very, very well and remember it. Her father-in-law, Mike, likes to time me on something that her father, Mike, sorry. Her father, Mike Lacona, he likes to time me on something that if you come up to me, for instance, and you tell me your birthday, day, month, and year, you give me a few seconds, I will tell you what day of the week you were born on. I've had mothers come up to me wanting to do this, and I've told them what day of the week their children were born on, and they say, sorry, you're wrong. No, I'm not. And I'm like, yeah, you are. Say, okay, I've got my phone here. Let's put this in. There. See? Back when I got this cold diagnosed, my dad was talking to the nurse practitioner there with me, and I was just looking at the paper, and then all of a sudden, I start quoting something. He says, what is that? I said, it's a celebrity cipher. You know, the cryptograms that you have where one letter stands for another one. Except when I do that cryptogram in there, I don't fill in any of the letters. I remember everything until I've got the whole thing solved. And it usually takes me 3 to 5 minutes. 6 minutes. I thought you were just reading the comics. Nope, I wasn't. Asperger's for me is a gift, but I'll tell you, the greatest blessing, though, that came from my Asperger's, she's sitting right there. If it wasn't for my Asperger's, I wouldn't get to meet her. And I tell people that before I got married, I was pro-marriage. You know, marriage is between one man and one woman. I was indeed that. Now I am pro-marriage. And one of the great things is finding someone who just does love you. And once we form a good relationship with you, we are usually in tight. and we value you greatly. And if you leave us and such, it can hurt us greatly. For my wife is exceptionally weird. She takes these kinds of losses very, very seriously. I instead take the opposite. I take it like a betrayer and get angry more often than not. But it's something deep for us. But we will be loyal to you. We are usually constantly worried that we are doing the wrong thing or saying the wrong thing. No doubt many times we are. But we need that same grace that you'd show to anyone else. And so what I'm saying for you today here is, I really want you to look at the person you meet who's got mental conditions. Now, I've focused a lot on Asperger's because that's what I've related to, but I've talked some about depression and other conditions as well. These are a lot of chemical imbalances a lot of times. They don't just go away by just pure willpower and such. Of course, we can work at them and develop past them and move on. But it's not a light switch we're going to flip on and off. It takes time and effort. And you need to love us in that effort. For me, I can say a personal illustration for how this works with me is you can look at me and think, this is someone who's very, very rational. He's got his head on straight. Probably nothing phases him. And then I could come up here and say, let me tell you about taking my husband to a swimming pool. My husband is terrified of water, open water like that. As soon as I get in there, this Dr. Spock personality goes right out the window, and I am panicking and screaming for dear life. One of the most incredible things she ever did with me on a honeymoon is she got me out into a 5-foot section of a swimming pool. Yes, I thought she was trying to kill me some even there. But she did, and she got me out into the ocean about waist deep. We went to Ocean Isle Beach for our honeymoon. But there was even a time she wanted me to go for like 3 feet to 4 feet, one lap at a YMCA pool with her. 3 times on the way, I asked her if she had taken out a life insurance policy on me recently. So I'm saying that about me because I want you to know that I, too, have those weaknesses. And although people like us, we may not seem to feel and respond the same way, if you cut us, we're going to bleed just like you do. We may not feel everything the same way you do, but we do have feelings. We do have hearts. We do have souls. We do have thoughts and ideas. We have our own dreams we want to work towards. And I'll tell you, I think one of the best things we all want is someone to believe in us. Just like everyone else, we want someone to look at us and say, you go for your dreams. That's what I've always told everyone. I said, whatever you want, say, honey, if you want it, I want you to work your tail off for it. I want you to do everything you can to get it. And don't let people tell you no. Because if I'd listen to those people who were one tell me no, I wouldn't be here talking today about this important topic. And by the way, apologetics, for those of us who are intellectually geared, can work very, very well for us. If you go up to us and you start talking about a personal relationship with Jesus Christ and how you're supposed to feel about Christianity and such, it is not going to relate. For those of us who are intellectually geared, you give us an argument, it is going to relate. Apologetics works for us very well. Yeah, I've spoken quite a bit. I have to say, it's quite odd that when I listen to this class on my podcast that I've always thought it was this small, tight-knit circle, and now I'm sitting here and thinking, well, I guess I was wrong. But I'd like to now know, does anyone have any questions for me about this topic? I guess that's why the mic is being passed around here.
Thank you. My nephew is about 31 or 2, and he's has the same condition you do. He has completed college, but you can probably relate to this. He cannot get through a job interview, so he can't get a job.
Right.
And but anyway, I thought you might want to comment about those problems.
Yeah. I also want to say something about how you said it's a condition. You didn't say this, But I always want to clarify when someone says, I was introduced once on the Unbelievable debate show because I was called on to do the debate about the earthquake in Haiti. And Justin Brierley, who hosts that, described me as someone who suffers with Asperger's. And I had to correct him and say, no, look, I don't suffer with Asperger's. Suffering is a choice. I live with Asperger's. Sometimes I suffer. But to get to your question, yeah, I've held a number of jobs in my life. Right now, I don't have one, honestly, because having the interview is one thing, but usually if I get a job that's food-oriented, for instance, it's very difficult for me. I usually scratch my face and such. That doesn't work well with a lot of people. So technically right now I'm unemployed, but I do research for Risen Jesus. And groups like IVP and Erdmans and Zondervan and such send me free books. Yeah, isn't that awesome? And I review them. That's usually how I get all the guests for my show and such. But I'd say if you want to give them some help, usually you can find some programs in your area that can help train people on how to do basic things like a job interview and such. And that's really the best advice I could give you. I'm sorry if you were wanting more, but that's about all I can give. I think there was a question over there.
First of all, for the record, I've got the same condition you do, so this really resonated with me. But I remember doing research about autism as a whole, and I know that Asperger's is a subset of that.
Uh-huh.
It's the APA officially calls it now high-functioning autism.
Yes.
So, and I remember reading about with autism, there's frequently a comorbidity with intellectual disability, but I know that with high-functioning autism / Asperger's that it precludes, you know, intellectual disability. So I guess my question is, do you happen to know of the percentage of those who have autism, what percentage would be considered high functioning / Asperger's? Do you happen to know that?
I honestly don't, but I mean, you can have, or let's be clear, you can be very smart and have an intellectual disability still. Again, thank someone like Sheldon Cooper. Really smart on the Big Bang Theory, but absolutely clueless with social relationships and such. So it can happen, and we can have a very difficult time with interpretation of a lot of materials. Usually the day-to-day mundane stuff, it doesn't make any sense to us whatsoever. I'm so thankful my mother-in-law is here to tell me all the things I need to do to get ready for a talk from a social level that I would not think of otherwise. I mean, I'd walk out the door without brushing my hair and not even think a thing about it. So I'm sorry I don't have that information.
All right, thanks.
Hey, Nick, for your ministry, Deeper Waters, what is your, or just in general, the work you do, what's your favorite area of apologetics?
The resurrection, of course.
There you go. Good answer.
My interest also, I take a different stance from my father-in-law. I like to use the argument for the resurrection from an honor-shame perspective. The New Testament culture is an honor-shame. I was talking to a lady here from Taiwan. We talked about how Japanese culture is very honor-based. If you do not understand honor and shame and the way those cultures work, you are going to miss a whole lot of the Bible, because the Bible is entirely an honor-shame document. I'd give you some recommended reading on this. You can ask me later if you forget these titles. The Global Gospel by Warner Mischke is a great book. And Misreading Scripture with Western Eyes by Randolph Richards and Brandon O'Brien. Excellent book. By the way, I've interviewed both of those authors on my show, Randy Richards and Warner Mischke, so if you want the audio format, you can go there. Next question.
Nick, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing some of your story. This is most helpful. I was just heard something. This was brand new to me. You're probably very familiar with it. Some people who are not in touch with their emotions on the autism spectrum, magnetic stimulation of some sort. NPR has had a series on this. Do you want to comment on that at all? Or
I don't know about magnetic stimulation exactly, but I do know that for a lot of us, we can have adverse reaction to a lot of things. My wife, for instance, if you had dropped balloons in here, she'd be fine. But as soon as you start popping them, she'd have to run out of the room because she can't take that. For me, I can sometimes have a sort of thought overload. Now, I'm very good at multitasking. Debbie, for instance, my mother-in-law here, thought I was being rude at sometimes when I'd be sitting there visiting them and I'd be playing a game on my DS or something at the same time. And then I'd be able to tell them everything they said back to them. Wait, he is listening. It's just, for me, my mind has to stay occupied with something. But a lot of times, I can still have a thought overload where all these thoughts come rushing in, and I can't sort them out, I can't tangle them out, and it's incredibly taxing on me. So you'll find a lot of these people have these kinds of things, some sensory overload. Like my wife still, when she's out there, if there's a huge crowd, it's going to be very difficult for her. I manage my way through it some of them. We are different.
Good morning, or I guess good afternoon. First of all, bazinga.
Bazinga.
secondly, you mentioned something earlier about how Christians react, and I totally agree with you, because being in the church entire life, you just see it. It's almost like a sort of a bullying, because we're ignorant.
Yeah.
And we sit there and we act like, well, let's pray for that couple.
Yeah.
And then, well, why aren't we praying? Well, they have Asperger's. And it's almost like a gossip. We almost pretend that it's praying, but we go into this full thing. You see it on social media. It's horrible.
Gossip in churches is most often disguised as a prayer request.
Exactly. And it's almost like a bullying type thing. Do you have recommended reading or anything like that, even for young people? I'm a father of four, and always telling our kids, you know, sometimes in church, that's where you're going to get the most hate, and people just are so ignorant with their comments and different things like that. Do you have anything like that for even adults, a book or something written from the Christian perspective of an anti-bully, you know, sort of a in-your-face, this is what we do as Christians, but we don't see it because...
Yeah. First of all, I would like to say, yes, this is what we do as Christians. I think too many of us Christians put on a face and such. I mean, how many of you all have felt great respect for a pastor whenever he's admitted a weakness publicly? Anyone? Yep. We know that great respect, but yet so few of us will get up and say, I'm not going to talk about myself. I don't want people to look at me like that. That's one reason I'm very open and candid about my fear of water, for instance. And yes, I've actually been baptized. That took a heck of a lot, especially with a steel back here. There was a lady I was once working with, and she saw me as a spiritual mentor and said, so after you got baptized, did you feel any different? I said, yeah, I sure did. I felt cold and wet. But with what you were talking about here, with recommended books, the first one that came to my mind is I interviewed someone on my show, I think it was last April. His name is Stephen Bedard. And he wrote a book, How to Make Your Church More Autism Friendly. It's a short book. You could read it in a day very easy. And now he's come out with something else because he's recently discovered that he himself has autism. So he's written about being an autistic pastor. And there's a lot of other authors you can read in this area. Temple Grandin, for instance, is very well known. Watch movies like Adam or Mozart and the Whale. And honestly, my mother-in-law here has probably read more books on autism than I have. So she's probably got a few more in mind that she could recommend too. But Stephen Bedard is the first one. Bedard. Mm-hmm.